Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. I'm Amanda, and I just want to give you a quick preview. If you haven't listened to the first part of this episode, go back to yesterday's episode and listen to it. This is the second part of Sam's deep dive into, you know, her experience in Mormon culture and how she finally left Utah and her experience with faith transition. And this episode is going to really touch on, what does it feel like to rebuild your life in your 30s? How do you process the grief of realizing you stayed in a life that wasn't working for you or was too small? It's a pretty raw conversation. There are some emotional moments. And Sam talks also about being a late bloomer in life. So whether you've experienced religious deconstruction yourself or you're just at a crossroads in your life thinking about what's next, I know that you will find a lot of value in this episode. This episode is brought to you by Therapy for Women Center. If you didn't know, that is my practice. We are based in Philly, and we have an office on the Main Line and Collingswood, New Jersey, but we have therapists located in 42 states across the country. So if you are listening and feeling like you need some extra support, maybe you need a new therapist, maybe you need a therapist who really is aligned with your values and understands how difficult things are in the world right now, please reach out to us. We would love to help you. Our website is therapyforwomencenter.com. We also have a psychiatrist and a nurse practitioner who can help with medication management if you're looking to add that, and a nutritionist on staff. So without further ado, let's get into the episode.
So think of if you, let's say you go to college, you're in Utah, and all of your friends from high school probably went to the same university that you did. Your family is already there. You have people from your ward that you still know that are maybe like an hour or so away from where you live now, and you have this new ward. And then you marry someone who is also from Utah. Their family is there. Then you know their family. You have zero motivation to make friendship.
Yeah.
Because friendship is built in for you.
Totally.
And then anytime someone—
And like people have such big families. Correct. So it's like when you marry a family,
yes,
you're going to have—
yeah. You'll have in-laws and you'll have cousins-in-law and you'll have, right, you know, sisters and brothers-in-law, and like you have no motivation to make friends. And yeah. So that was really, really hard for me because I remember, you know, you'd get on Facebook and then eventually Instagram and then all these other social media platforms, and I would see all these people that I still knew from growing up that were having these incredible friend groups. Yeah. And I didn't have that. And I was desperately trying to have it and nobody was really interested.
Yeah.
Because everybody just like leaned in on their family or leaned in on who they know. And I guess inherently there's nothing wrong with that, but it's also incredibly insulated.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to break through that. And so I think something that makes me really sad about my experience there is I didn't realize how isolated and lonely I was. Mm. Of course, I made friends. There's people that I knew. But I remember this deep feeling that I was missing out on this part of my life. Mm. And as I got into my mid-20s and my later 20s, and you kind of lean into your career, and so you get out of that more like school type, mm-hmm, insulated vibe, and you kind of get out into the real world. And but it was still there. It was still prevalent in the whole culture. And that was really hard for me because I realized like I was bucking up against this culture and I was trying to find a way to stay while making it work, but making it work the way I wanted it to. And it just wasn't possible.
Yeah.
You know, one of my closest friends, Sarah, she would say to me all the time, she's like, you're too big. Like, you're too big for that place.
Yeah.
You need more. You're too big. And it took me a long time to understand what she was saying. And my parents too. My parents wanted me to move for a really, really long time.
Yeah.
And part of the problem was I didn't know where to go.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the hardest parts of change that doesn't get talked about a lot is sometimes you like desperately want this change, but you don't know. You're like, okay, but then where do I go?
Yeah.
And it adds to the sense of feeling stuck. And so you almost burrow in deeper because it's like, well, it's working here technically. So I might as well like make it work. And then finally, I just decided like, I'm going to shrivel up and die. Like I will regret it for the rest of my life if I end up building a life here.
Yeah.
And so I left at 33. Mm-hmm. And when I left, so I moved out. The movers came, picked up my stuff. I spent a night at my cousin's home because she just bought a new home, and spent the night at her house. And the next day I was going to drive from her house to the airport, pick up my dad. And then we were going to drive out east. And so the drive from her house to the airport was probably like 35, 40 minutes. And I like really, I like let it out in the car. Like I just cried and cried and cried and cried. And I was driving all the way up the freeway and I was seeing all of these. I saw the house that I had just left and I saw like all these kind of different markers and places that I knew. And the second I picked up my dad and we drove through what's called Parley's Canyon, which is what would take you past like Park City and all that, which is where we're going to go. It was the wildest feeling in the world. It was like, I had never felt like relief like that in my life. Mm-hmm. When I was like, oh my God, like I did it. Mm. Like I did it. Like it's done. It's happening. I'm not talking about it anymore. Like I did it.
Yeah.
And I never looked back. Like I never had doubts of like, should I, shouldn't I have, what if, like it was just this firm, like, no, like you need to go. And so when I was in the 6 months since then, because it's been on the 29th, it'll be 6 months to the day that I drove out. And I think this is the part of change that doesn't get talked about enough. I think change itself gets hyped up because the initial change is really exciting. Mm-hmm. And it's that first moment where you're kind of like flexing that bravery and living out all of the prep work that you've been doing up to that. But something in the last 6 months that I've been having to really realize is it's now opened up like all of this. Maybe it is shame. I don't know if shame is too strong of a word. Maybe it's sadness. Maybe it's grief that I stayed so long. And I've been really trying to have like compassion for myself in that process of like, I was a really traumatized, insecure little kid when I showed up there. And I really didn't want to cry. I really like fought it. Like a lot of what I went through there wasn't necessarily external. It was very, very internal. And I did a lot of it like by myself. Like I had a therapist and off and on, but so much of it was internal. And those were like really hard, sad, lonely years for me. And I didn't know it until I was gone. And so I think something I want to normalize for people is that when you make a huge change like that, of course there's going to be relief. Of course there's going to be joy. Of course there's going to be like excitement because it's new and you're proud of yourself because you did it. But also like hold space for all of those hard feelings that had been there but weren't really at the forefront because you were still in the place that kept you safe from those emotions, if that makes sense, right? Like if you find yourself like you committed to leaving the relationship or you got the divorce or you moved or you changed the job or you ended a friendship, right? Like when you get to the other side of that, there's always, more often than not, going to be the realizations of what that period of your life put you through. And I've had to be like really gentle with myself as I've realized how long I sold myself short, how long I kept myself too small. And a lot of that was contributed to the culture that I was living in because the culture rewards that. It rewards small. It rewards pigeonholed. It rewards there's only one way to be, right? And I think if I had gotten married really young and had kids really young and bought into that, the system would have worked for me because the system is designed for that. Yeah. Now, there's a lot of people that are suffering in other ways.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that are deeply unhappy there but are really afraid to admit that because you're not supposed to be. You're not supposed to be unhappy in your marriage. You're not supposed to be unhappy as a parent. You're not supposed to be unhappy in your callings and your ward, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people out there that are really struggling. And I think that because it's a religion that so often preaches joy, mm-hmm. that it is antithetical to discuss the ways it can cause harm. Mm. And people become very defensive when you bring that up. Very defensive. And there, I have a list of people in my mind who I grew up with and people that I interacted with out there who caused me a lot of emotional damage. And I've really wrestled if I've ever wanted to be more public about some of the things that have happened and the things that people have done to me. And I don't know if I'm there yet, but there are three bishops that come to my mind that really did a lot of damage to not only me. I know they did damage to a lot of other people. And I have a lot of bitterness towards that. I think towards even like one in particular, and maybe one day I will. I don't feel ready to do that yet, but it's hard. It's a religion that has some truly wonderful people, mm-hmm. some really amazing, incredible people that are so kind and giving and would do anything for you. And it's also filled with people that use that power and authority that they're given to their advantage and to kind of live out their own little fantasies of having their own little like fiefdoms and kingdoms that mm-hmm. they get to rule and manage. And because they're quote unquote chosen for that, there's kind of this factor that they deserve it and that how they treat it is because they were chosen. And so people need to like bow down to that. And I really struggle with that. And I have a lot of resentment towards that for ways that it impacted me and ways that I know it's impacted other people. Stories that I've heard from people over the years, things that have happened, things that have been minimized and dismissed and belittled. And so I feel like I'm in some ways in my life, and I think the coffee situation kind of is representative of this, but I know in some ways in my life, I'm like a really late bloomer. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes I'm really like embarrassed, mm-hmm. but I've had to, it's hard because sometimes I'm embarrassed of my own life. Yeah. And I know that's not fair. Mm-hmm. And so I'm allowing myself this space to like rebuild that and to say like, you know, if my life really takes off in my early 30s, it takes off in my early 30s. And I did the best I could with what I had at the time. And I think that's why so much of my content is centered around that, because I've lived that. Like I've lived that journey. I've lived that feeling of knowing you're betraying yourself in some way, but you don't know the how. And knowing that something needs to be different, but you're so overwhelmed by it, you don't even know where to start. And so I think just giving yourself like time, like to recognize that A, whatever you meet on the other side is going to be as good as you think it is. Mm-hmm. I think that's been something that I've learned for me. Even though I knew you, thank God, but I didn't really know anybody else. I didn't know where anything was. I'd been in Florida a collective like 12 days of my life before I moved here, which I guess is like a trend now, apparently. Because it was the same way when I moved to Utah. But you know, it was, I felt for the first time in my life, I felt what it was like to be like free. And it takes time to like lean into that, and it takes time to unwind. And yeah, it's a really that culture and that belief of like there's only one way to be and there's a right way to be and a wrong way to be is really deep.
Well, what I'm hearing too is it like limits your – the word that's coming to my mind is creativity, but I'm sure there could be a bunch of other words. But like when you live in a culture that's that homogenous and I think this used to be the way before social media. We didn't, right? Like what we had was in front of us, which was good in some ways that we talk about on this podcast.
Right.
But in this way, I'm talking about it as like there isn't an example of necessarily people who live different lives than just getting married, having kids, staying at home, whatever.
No.
And I think that that sounds like one of the hardest parts where I think, you know, when you're in a bigger city or you're in a bigger area that isn't just like that,
right,
it is easier sometimes to combat some of the shame maybe.
Yeah.
Because it's like, no, there are actually all these other incredible people I know who are doing it their way and who have a different life path than the traditional one.
Right. Like I, for so long when I really, like, because also like the singles wards for a long time were 18 to 32.
Yeah.
That was like the cutoff.
What do they do with the 33-year-olds?
So you were supposed to go, you had two options. You could either go to a normal family ward.
What does that mean?
You go just with, like a ward. Okay. Just like where families and older people and whatever would be. You could go there. Or you could go to the mid-singles ward, which was like 32 to 45. And that was a sad, sad place to be. And I remember at 32 when that happened. I had a conversation.
When did you stop going to church? And when did your – what did they say? They say your shelf broke?
I last went
– Is that a phrase?
That's very much a phrase, yeah. I last went January of last year. No, December. It was December of 23. That was the last time I like went – to church. And I was in like a normal family ward at the time. And those people were very, very nice and they were very welcoming at the time. But again, you're kind of a like, ooh, a woman in her 30s that's not married. Wow. Like it's this odd, you can very quickly become a project.
Yeah.
Right. And I remember like when you're a kid, there's kind of this like fear. There's this deep rooted fear that you would get to your 30s and not be married and not have kids. And it was kind of almost like, well, that won't happen because you'll just find someone and it'll be fine.
Yeah.
And then when I realized it happened, but then I still wasn't even in a place where I was like, I don't even know if I want that yet. Right. Like I didn't feel ready for it in some ways, but it's seen as like you've either messed up and you missed the boat or now like you just have to accept that there's a really good chance that it won't happen to you, which is insane. It's insane. But in that community where everybody paired off between the ages of 19 and 22, your pool of options is quite small.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes, even being here, now that I've thought about like getting out there, in my mind, I sometimes have that. I still have that like, well, everybody is like, it's gone.
Yeah.
Everybody's taken. Maybe in the next life, you know?
Yeah.
And I've been having to like really unwind from that idea. Now, I think dating right now is a disaster for its own reasons. Mm-hmm. But I'm still like mentally unwinding from so much of that cultural trauma, like that, those cultural beliefs that are ingrained in you that I've never really even aligned with, but you just had to, because that was the group that you were a part of.
So it sounds to me too, like I know people talk about their shelf breaking because they were like literal believers who literally believed, right, that Moroni came down. Moroni. Now it's a habit.
Please just keep doing it. It's okay.
Right? Care. Like that, like Joseph Smith was a literal prophet mm-hmm. not that long ago.
Right.
Right. And then, or like they literally couldn't look at certain things on the internet, right? Because you're like not allowed to look at anything that's like counter to the church.
Yeah. You literally get asked if you want to get what's called a temple recommend, you literally get asked, do you encounter any anti-literature?
Yeah. So, right, like I think some people talk about they became disillusioned when like some yeah. things that literally they were told is truth that they literally mm-hmm. believe they find out mm-hmm. are like not true.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like for you, because you didn't grow up that way, you just mm-hmm. kind of like loosely assimilated.
Yeah.
But maybe it wasn't like a shattering moment.
No.
Because it's not like you heard someone talk on a podcast right. about something and it was like –
There's even like, I will say this, and this is something that gets a little confusing sometimes, is there are some things that there's a part of me that's like, I kind of hope that's true.
Like what?
Like meaning this, like this idea that your family mm-hmm. is literally yours forever. Like you, yeah. you never are separated from them. You're together forever, which I know some of you with your families, you're like, please God, no. But like for me at times, I think I hope there's a part of that that's true, that when yeah. we pass on, you get to be with whoever you want for forever.
Did you watch The Good Place, by the way?
No.
You should.
I know. I've had quite a few people ask me if I watched that, so maybe I'll start watching that. But yeah, no, for me, it was – I know I have friends who have very specific like shelf-breaking moments.
Do you have any examples that you can share?
So the
or just, you know, you don't have to say names.
No. The big one that has thrown off a lot of people that I know is something that's called the CES letter. Mm-hmm. And so that is a letter that basically outlines how – I've never read it, full disclosure. I know of what's in it. It basically breaks down how the church is not true. Mm-hmm. And it challenges a lot of like the – basic foundations of what people rely on. Like I said, I haven't read it. I've never really felt like a need
yeah.
to, but also a lot of the people that have were raised in very rigid homes
yeah.
where there was that like firm, like, I know. Like, and even if you ever like bore your testimony, like at church or-
What does that mean?
So that means like you basically say like why you believe what you believe mm. and what you believe in. There was kind of like a script that everybody says. Well, like,
that is very culty.
I know the church is true. I know Joseph Smith was a prophet. I know my Savior lives. I know – like there were things – like I can list off the things that people would say to say like I know. And I remember I was a Sunday school teacher. I was very good at that, by the way. And I remember I like stirred the pot when I said, I don't feel comfortable saying I know, but I'll say I believe. Mm-hmm. And people push back on that. And they're like, well, how could you not know? And I'm like, because I haven't seen Jesus. I haven't seen Moroni. I haven't seen Joseph Smith. I wasn't there to know. Like, I believe. I haven't met God. Like, I haven't. So how – like the arrogance for me to say I know. Yeah. But that is so ingrained that you say like, I know, mm-hmm. I know. There's the first Sunday of every month is what's called Fast Sunday. Mm-hmm. And so that's where you're supposed to fast. So it's basically like breakfast and lunch. And you, when you start the fast the night before, it's basically like to receive inspiration. So it's kind of like a sacrifice, right? Of kind of these mm-hmm. like human needs in like wanting something good mm-hmm. to happen. And so that Sunday, normally other Sundays, people are assigned to give talks on like different topics. And that could be anyone in the ward. But fast and testimony meeting is open mic night. Mm-hmm. And literally anybody can get up in the ward mm-hmm. and share their stories mm-hmm. and share their thoughts. And it's wild. I have sat through some wild testimonies. When someone gets up with a journal, mm-hmm. you know you're in for it, mm-hmm. right? Or people have taken the hymn book up mm-hmm. and they'll just like read off from the hymn that like they felt really moved by mm-hmm. or whatever. They'll share their stories of like things that had happened that week or whatever. One time someone stood up and said that they knew they had calculated when the second coming was going to be.
Oh my.
And like the bishop had to be like, hey, no, like maybe let's be done. Like, so just stuff like that.
Does the bishop like visit from room to room, or there is a specific bishop for your ward?
So there's a specific bishop for our ward okay. that like leads the ward. And then he has a first counselor and a second counselor that kind of like help with stuff. And then there's like a Sunday school presidency and a Relief Society presidency and Elders Quorum presidency and primary presidency and young women's and young men's. It's like we are organized. Organized. We are a corporation. That is absolutely accurate. Yeah. But anyway, so Fast and Testimony meeting. It's open mic night. And I remember like people would bring their kids up, mm-hmm. like their 4 or 5, 6-year-old, and whisper in their ear what to say. Mm-hmm. And the kid would say it.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking like, that's not good. And they actually stopped that. They've actually mm-hmm. asked that kids under 8. So 8 is when you would get baptized.
Yeah.
I also love that they say kids have a quote unquote choice. Mm-hmm. You made such a good choice. I'm like, really, what would you do if your 8-year-old looked at you dead in the face and said, I'm not getting baptized tomorrow.
Yeah.
Would you really, like, you would really listen to them, mm-hmm. cancel the family brunch, mm-hmm. cancel the catering, okay? Return the dress, the suit that you bought for it. Like, it's not a choice.
Yeah.
And I think I get really frustrated when parents try to pretend like they're giving their 8-year-old a choice.
Yeah.
No, you're not. Yeah. You have been telling them since they could form conscious thoughts, when you get baptized, when you get confirmed, when you get baptized, when you go on your mission, when you do this, when you go through the temple, like it has been, there has never been a choice.
Yeah.
And that is like a part of it that I've really struggled with is I think so many people did things because they didn't feel that they had a choice. And Kendra went to BYU. I didn't.
Your sister.
Oh yeah, Kendra, my sister. She went to BYU. And she remembers when she was in a student ward there, some girl stood up. She was 20 years old mm-hmm. and she was literally weeping because she was going to graduate the next year and she wasn't dating anyone. And she would talk about how the Lord was putting her through such a trial because she wasn't yet married. And she was 20 years old. And that is just like, if you think back on it, like that is just an unhinged culture to realize that you were a part of.
Yeah.
And that there were times where I would sit there and people would say those things and be like, wow. Or I remember there was a guy in church leadership that I knew. He was like 29 when he got married and his wife was 30. And I remember I was like 24 when I heard that story. And I remember thinking like, oh my God, like that's so old.
Yeah.
And so it's just bizarre. It's so bizarre and the structure of it is just wild and I don't know it's a really confusing thing to unwind from. And so I don't think I have like a specific my shelf shattered at this moment. I think it was just my shelf was already kind of like at the baseboard right and then it just kind of I think what I realized is all of a sudden everything was on the floor.
Yeah.
That's kind of like my moment. I kind of turned around. It wasn't a big deal. It wasn't a big sound. There wasn't one thing that happened. It was like I turned around and was like, oh.
Yeah.
I don't think I want to fix that.
Yeah.
So.
How do you feel now? Like in terms of like with specifically religion?
It's actually, I sometimes get sad because there's parts of the ritual that I miss. Mm-hmm. There was something that was sometimes nice about Sundays and going and attending that.
Yeah,
and
Sundays must be a weird day for you.
It is weird. You feel like, you always feel like you're like skipping class.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I would describe it. It just always feels like you're not where you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
And that's still, that hasn't changed. I'm also very lucky because my parents are very, very accepting. My mom is really understanding of it. My dad is having a little harder of a time.
Yeah.
I think he's pretty sad about it. And sometimes there's a part of me that's like, I wish I could make it work. And I think sometimes in my quiet moments, I do still have the thought of, well, what if? Mm-hmm. Like, could I just go do the spiritual thing, not be a part of the mess, yeah. right? But then they have a lot of expectations on you to go, and they want you to be involved. And yeah. there kind of is something wrong with you if you're not involved. But then I go back to like, but would it be wrong to have a community, but say, I'm not fully engaged in it. I go when I want to, right? Yeah. And so I still wrestle with it. And that's why with any of my clients who are going through deconstruction work, I say all the time, like, this is a marathon. Yeah. Like there's no – and I think that's what is so confusing is when you're talking about deconstruction, you're talking about going from a framework that was so rigid yeah. in what was right and what was wrong, in the right timelines and when things happen and this and you do this and then you do that and then you get this and then that happened. Like it was so rigid. It was so black and white. You knew everything you needed to do all the time. To tick all the boxes. And then the second you remove that, it's so overwhelming to try to process, like, what do you mean I make my own decisions now? I've never had to do that.
Yeah.
Because it was just assumed I would do X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
So when all of a sudden someone's like, yeah, do you want to do it? Do you not want to do it? What do you want to do?
Yeah.
And you're like, I don't know. Like, it's so, it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
And so that's why I'm really big on don't put the pressure on yourself. Like, it just... You get to decide. Some people, it's a Band-Aid.
Yeah.
And I said this on Haley's podcast. Sometimes you have to stand up at family dinner in front of everybody and say, I'm done. I don't want to talk about it. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Some people need to do one fell swoop like that.
Yeah.
And for other people, maybe there's certain members of your family that you never really talk to about it.
Yeah.
Maybe there's some you have the conversation, you don't. Mm-hmm. Maybe you decide you're just going to go away. Like there's no right way or wrong way to do it. And so – if you find yourself kind of like unwinding from, and I think this is also true of like people leaving abusive relationships, mm-hmm. like you have to take time to like rebuild trust with yourself and rebuild what you want your life to be and an understanding of what your value system is. Because I think what's hard is like, I still carry some of those values.
Yeah.
Like Mormons are big on accountability.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big on accountability, honesty, like faithfulness. Those are things that are still important to me in my day-to-day life and things that I still try to live. And so, but then it's like, I don't want to say that that was where the foundation was from because you still have resentment towards the foundation. Yeah. So it's just, it's a big cluster.
Makes sense. But I think, I mean, so, right, Sam and I interviewed someone named Matthew Facciani, who's going to be coming on the podcast in like a month or so. He is a misinformation expert. And it, literally, Sam and I have been like marinating on this conversation.
It's a big one.
It's really incredible. It's a big one. And one of the big things we keep coming back to is he kept talking to us about the importance of having identities that are different and all of your eggs are essentially not in like one basket or one specific identity, and how that sort of like robs people of the ability to change, be flexible, see things from different perspectives. Mm-hmm. Figure out their own values. Mm-hmm. Like he kind of – the metaphor we kind of co-created together was if you want to have firm values and understand who you are, you have to kind of like a tree. You have to shake in the wind to develop deeper roots.
Yeah.
But it feels horrible and awful and we don't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's like interesting that I hear what you're kind of saying, Sam, is like it is really hard to deconstruct religion – because it's really hard to figure out where you start, where you stop, where religion starts and stops, where like the cultural stuff of the religion probably with you starts and stops. Mm-hmm. When all of your – when, you know, your social life, your work life, your family life – I mean, you were a little different, I think, in that your family life was a bit separate – is all – in that it is extremely difficult to detangle it, because I think about myself a little bit and like it was hard to detangle from my eating disorder, for example. And it was harder to detangle from my eating disorder than my addiction, my alcohol, because my family had a healthy relationship with alcohol. And I could remember before I drank. So it wasn't like, this is who I am.
Right.
Where when I was trying to get into recovery, some of my first memories of thinking I was too big, I was too fat or whatever, even when I was little, And my family is very, very like health conscious oriented. So it was like, how am I going? I mean, I remember when I was deconstructing that, part of it was like, if I become fat, I don't know if I'll be like lovable to my family, which like isn't true, but it was
feels
like,
true.
Right. It felt true. Yeah. So it's like, I imagine that's really hard about it, because it is like, if you reject the culture, like if you reject your religion, you're rejecting parts of yourself, you're rejecting your family, you're potentially rejecting friends. You have to rethink about your own memories, and you don't even necessarily have a really strong foundation of yourself before this happened.
Right. Yeah. It's just, it's always who I was.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right that it is, it's the realigning of identity. And I think for me, it's been more realignment. I think for some people, it's complete rebuilding. Yeah.
Right. I think probably the people that are multi-generational grew up there. I can't even imagine.
And I know people. I have very good friends who I would say have rebuilt.
Yeah.
And it's hard. And it never ends, especially if you maintain close connections with family members that are in it. But I think what I'll close this out with is, I think the interesting thing about Matthew's conversation that we had, and I'm really excited for you guys to hear this, is – it's made me push back on the like, well, should I go? Mm. Like, am I punishing myself simply because I don't want to be around these people who I don't know who are the people that would be in the word here, that because I'm afraid of exposing myself to that again, because I don't have trust that I'll be able to like have the boundaries that I would need to have with it if I wanted to go from like a more spiritual place, but then I'm still like, but I don't that. Like, it's just, it's confusing, well, it's like, and it's hard.
It's like you do, you know, before you go to a wedding.
Yeah.
As an attendee, like you have to make sure your recovery is strong enough before you expose yourself the first time to alcohol.
Right.
No answers.
Just that therapy session for you, that trauma dump. But I think I'm glad we had
this. It's not a trauma dump. We need to use words appropriately.
Thank you for calling me out. That was not a trauma dump.
This was a consented conversation where I asked you to talk about this.
She asked me to do this, and I did it. And you don't have to listen to this, but you are. This whole conversation, I am glad that I had the chance to dive into it deeper, because I think when I talk about like my experience of moving, I know I've had some people DM me and kind of are like, a little confused about the intensity sometimes with which I talk about it, kind of similar to when we chatted about like last year and the experience and all that, and like unwinding from that and everything. Like this was like 33 years of like trauma.
It was a lot more than just you moving.
Right.
It was like the official end,
of
of being a Mormon.
Yeah. Sort of. Like in a lot of ways, I knew when I left, there were a lot of things that I wasn't going to be returning to. And it's been so freeing and so wonderful to be on the other side of that. And I think it was really surprising to realize, like, when I got on the plane. Also, I got upgraded on the way home, and I took that as a sign that I was doing the right thing. that was lovely. But like when, you know, like you're just kind of – you're sitting in the airport and you're thinking or whatever. And it was wild – like I miss people, and it was wonderful to see people, and kind of a little sad that like, ugh, like we can't just do this all the time like we used to. But then it very quickly was like, no, I got to go home and I have to work on this and I want to do this. And I think next weekend I'm going to do that. Right. And it was such like a full circle moment for me to be able to be like, oh, I'm happy. Like I'm okay. And life isn't fixed and life isn't perfect, and that's fine. And I'm still learning about myself and I'm still growing, and that'll never change. But to make the realization that I think I'm on the other side of a lot of things that I thought I was still behind. And that's just like a very lovely feeling.
Thanks for being so vulnerable today.
Yeah.
We hope you all liked this episode. If you like hearing Sam talk, she talks a lot on the Substack.
I was going to say she doesn't shut up as my co-host.
just trying to get a word in. No, I was trying to tell people they should go to the Substack to listen to you every week. You drop a new video episode.
Me too.
We also have bonus episodes on the Substack. Mm-hmm. Weekly guides where a lot of times if we break down like a bigger concept like narcissism or burnout, we will make a whole guide that has graphics and you can download it now, which is great. So check us out at nuancenegated.substack.com. That's linked there.
And if you have not already, we are really working hard on the back end to figure out how to get word out about the pod. And if you could rate, review, share, I think if there's someone that an episode really resonates with you, if you could just share it with one friend, that would be monumental for us. We're really excited for where things are headed. And I think we both have a lot of like really crazy dreams for where we would like to see this go. And so your support in any way, shape, or form like means the world to us. And we see every comment. We read every comment. We care about what you say. And we've had some of you email us like really, really wonderful things. And we are just so appreciative of that. So anything that you can do to get the word out would be wonderful.
And we'll be back next week.